Well, the Geelong VFL side will be in a bit of disarray because they'll be calling kids off the street in Geelong to come and play.
What annoyed me about Geelong VFL team is they were my big improvers for the last half of the year, and they're in danger of losing the Bendigo Bombers this week.
With all their late changes, definitely. Exactly. Bendigo are a big chance.
They've lost six players. None of those six players will play for Geelong VFL team. And the Bendigo Bombers, you assume that some of the Essendon players will be coming back. Yeah, so big upset on the cards for that one. I don't know if it's going to happen, but if it will happen, this will be the week.
So, yeah, I just think the Cats have realised that, obviously, the 4 points at this time of the year isn't as crucial as...
player management is more important, obviously.
Well, I mean, they've been up for so long, and I think, as I was saying, playing on Telstra Dome is a... They need to do an inquiry into it. I've been saying it for so long. There's so many soft tissue injuries and general soreness from teams who regularly play at Telstra Dome. St Kilda this year have been pretty lucky, but I reckon they've managed the virus at Telstra Dome. But Essendon are a team that have been struggling with a lot of soft tissue injuries. You get a lot of body contact injuries from hitting the ground, which you shouldn't get.
That's right. I personally think there's not enough earth between the top layer and the concrete underneath.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, the Western Bulldogs are another example of a team who can't regularly have the same 22 players fit. You look at Cooney and players like that, they're just generally not fit because as soon as you get a soft tissue injury, it's hard to regain your fitness. And when you're compounding that injury again on a hard surface like Telstra Dome every second week, it is going to take its toll. And if they want to focus on injuries to clubs, they really need to go and actually work out just how many players miss the following week from playing at Telstra Dome. Compared to other grounds, and how many actual injuries have been on these teams that actually play there. I think Essendon would have to be the biggest example of soft tissue injuries over the last two or three seasons from regularly playing at Telstra when they play an up-tempo brand of football.
St Kilda, when they were with the KC Scorpions, had wholesale injuries nearly week in, week out.
Well,
now they've moved to Sandringham.
Well, I think they've just been lucky. I think they've been just very lucky this year. And they're winning comfortably, so they've been able to use high rotations through their midfield. But a player like Luke Ball and Lenny Hayes, you know, those players have faced a lot of time on the bench in recent years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Telstra Dome is a concern for the AFL and the longevity of some of these players.
Yeah,
because groins and calves and quads and all these sort of leg injuries can hamper players' seasons. So
my solution is rip the turf up, layer of some sort of cushioning thing between the soil and the concrete underneath, some sort of shock absorber.
Well, it might
cost them $1 million.
It's been developed on ideas in America where they have their domes on top of car parks and everything like that, but they don't have...
The Americans don't jump 6 feet in the air and land, you know, awkwardly.
Well, I guess some of the wide receivers would, but it's a different impact because they're running with the flight of the football against the line that's in front of them.
That's right.
Bit like rugby league. You don't have to turn and bend, and half the time
you don't have other bodies intervening. I mean, there are times when they do, but, you know, as a rule...
Even those tackle injuries that players get wrapped and rammed into the ground, I mean, that wasn't a concern in AFL in the 80s and late 90s. Yeah. And now Telstra Dome's there and the players are running, getting rammed into concrete. They're getting knocked out. And all of a sudden there's a concern with how players are being tackled. So I think there is some major concerns there, away from what's actually happening at management level in terms of clubs being dominated through but dodgy contracts. But actually, I think there's going to be a bit more of a concern with players getting injured. So, yeah, just something that I think that the clubs need to look at.
Maybe they should get us on the committee to sort out the problems.
I don't think they like an honest approach sometimes,
Jim. Because they probably want yes-men on there, not people who are going to...
I mean, there's all those stories of...
Bring up the issues that matter.
I mean, there's all those stories of Waverley Park and the sticky surface creating knee injuries towards the end of it. Maybe that was just a scare campaign to try and close the venue down. They wouldn't do it at Etihad Stadium. But anyway...
I think they fabricate some of these stories for the shock factor.
I think we've worked out over the last 2 weeks in the AFL there is a big difference of quality of football between the top four teams and the rest at the moment.
Yeah.
And there'll be a long way to go to... for any of those teams to match it. Collingwood obviously faced their first opposition last night.
The toughest opposition.
Oh, their toughest opposition, yeah. And
come through with flying colours. Come through.
I don't know.
Well, they won, and they won hard.
Yeah.
You know, anyone can win by 60 points running away. Anyone can do that. But when you've got to, when you're 41 points up and all of a sudden the opposition start hitting you, and with scoreboard pressure, you've got to stand up. And I think the Collingwood defence, even though they later at a 41-point lead slipped to 1 point, they still hung on, and they never were headed apart from early in the game.
I just think Collingwood's depth is going to be a major concern. Players like Sharad Wellingham was definitely exposed last night in the pressure of a high-intensity game. Mm-hmm. Jack Anthony really didn't provide anything on a decent fullback like Brian Lake. So, you know, he's taken the number one defender now, mm-hmm. John Anthony. He's no longer two or three or four defender right. in the
He hasn't been around for it. I think he's only played about 12 games.
So, yeah. So Mr. Solarium, we labelled him in the VFL when he was playing.
Yeah, so he's still in that steep learning curve. Hopefully he can weather the storm and come back.
But congratulations to Collingwood. It's, what, 7 wins in a row now, I think. So that's been pretty impressive. But, yeah, we are here to talk about the VFL. It's round 13, and we have two broadcast games this weekend, back into the full swing. And we will be broadcasting this afternoon an interesting game of football. Werribee at home against Port Melbourne. Port Melbourne definitely improved their away form last weekend with a comprehensive victory against the Sandringham side. When Sortner still kicks a bag of goals at one end, to defeat them, it's a pretty good effort. They were never really in the game, were they, Sandy? They got close, but...
They played very, very poorly under pressure from Port Melbourne. Port Melbourne played... I won't say above themselves, but they certainly did what they had to do.
But when their better players play well, Port Melbourne are going to win a lot more games than they lose. Like Johnny Baird had a free reign at centre-half back, right. And, you know, the midfield was very good. I think Sam Dwyer had over 30 possessions, and Bonadio was actually doing constructive things inside his forward line. And, you know, I've been a bit of a campaigner about some of his undisciplined acts. I thought last weekend he really did dominate inside that forward 50, breaking packs open when he couldn't mark, and his goal-kicking was good, and... You know, really up and about. The DeLuca boys probably combined for one of their better games for the season as well. I think Gary Ayres would have been very happy with both Adrian and Fabian. Fabian doing some good ruck work. He, you know, 1 or 2 years away, Fabian DeLuca could get himself back on a Melbourne team list who are looking for a ruckman. You know, a team like Geelong or St Kilda with an aging rucking division. Fabian DeLuca, I think, has a bit unsure where he stood. You know, he was recruited pretty high in the draft at Port Adelaide. Obviously, behind Brogan and Lade, probably stunted his development. They've got a few big men over there at Port Adelaide, and obviously didn't find his feet in the sandfall. But back playing in Melbourne, getting through the halfway mark of the season, I think Fabian DeLuca could be a real linchpin for that Barra midfield, because he was definitely getting his first hands on the football against the inexperienced ruckman and Reece Stanley for Sandringham. Stanley has been impressive at times, but I think he was just getting monstered a little bit last weekend, unfortunately for him. But it was a good performance by Port Melbourne. They'll be very happy with that. Everyone contributed. When you have 22 contributors on the field, you're generally going to win. Back at Sandringham once again, Trevor Barker Oval for Sandringham versus Collingwood. Collingwood, after barnstorming the start of the season, have kind of starting to feel the niggles of trying to manage two teams, aren't they? And Sandringham... Well, their inconsistent up-and-down season continues. They could quite easily bounce back this weekend against the Pies. But I think Sandringham are going to really need to find that winning formula, because they can't rely on Sortner to kick all the goals.
That's right.
He's on 54 goals now, I think, for the season.
Something like that, yep.
So wonder if he can get his ton. He could average 6 goals, which I think he's only been averaging this year. So
well, after I wrote him off, he's come good, which is good. That's what you want to see. You want to see that these guys are listening to us and proving us wrong, because we don't mind being proven wrong, if it's for the better.
There's been some announcements through the week about the Bendigo Bombers.
Okay.
Official word, there'd be no more games at Queen Elizabeth Oval.
Yep. So till they improve.
Get the nails out and start just putting away that coffin of the Bendigo Bombers Football Club in the VFL. Yep.
So the alignment between the two clubs not looking good, or is it... It's time to move on.
Well, it's
been there 6 years.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to get a... I guess it's a wait-and-see situation for the Essendon Football Club. It's going to be a situation where, you know, we interviewed John Barry from the president of the Frankston Football Club when we were down at Frankston last, and I posed a question to him about the chances of an Essendon-Frankston alignment. He said he'd always be open to that, and obviously the viability of the football club going forward being there of Essendon. There are some real seething feelings towards that situation with the St Kilda Football Club. Was the first thing I found out from Frankston, obviously they had pinned some hopes on St Kilda going there and developing Frankston Park and building that as their out of Melbourne training centre. Yeah, for St Kilda to get so close and then move, what, 15 minutes down the road to the back lots of Seaford would have been a bit of a kick in the teeth for the Frankston Football Club. They're looking to survive. They're viable probably one more year by themselves, I got the feeling from John Barry. So they're not going to be totally back to the wall next year, but it wouldn't be a comfortable situation. They are relying on some community support, so you know, there's still time to get on board and support the Frankston Dolphins. And, I mean, in a perfect world, I don't think Frankston would align. But in the world that we're facing now, where, you know, finding sponsorships and community partnerships have been a bit of a toiling point for a lot of these clubs, and it's even more harder to manage when you're a standalone club and you don't have that support of an AFL club. You know, it's $160,000 a year, I think, just to have a club in the VFL. So some interesting times in the pre-season. We won't hear anything until then. You'd imagine that to try and keep that alignment between Essendon and the Bendigo side strong, that they're going to need to stick together towards the end of the season, because I don't think Essendon will be in a position to find enough players to top up an Essendon Metropolitan team if they lost the alignment with Bendigo. And I mean, there's guys who are Bendigo listed who have, you know, consistently given it their all for that football club. You know, we saw Kamiri and James Flaherty, who's still the captain there. Those guys have been on that list for a few years and, you know, trying to play football at the highest level. Unfortunately, the results haven't been there, so they haven't been able to build any momentum off the field. And, I mean, Bendigo are in a position where they can't commit either way, aren't they? I mean, are they even a football club? Like, you can't see the Bendigo Diggers going back and joining a local football competition. They're just gonna cease.
Yeah, they'll become no more.
And at this time, I mean, being at community radio level, you get privy to a lot of different heartfelt information, don't you? And, you know, the cause of the demise of the Bendigo Football Club could have a lot to do with the Essendon Football Club and their dominance in the way that team was going. We've seen it tried at other alignments and it's backfired and generally ends up fizzling out. I mean, Werribee and the Western Bulldogs finished on bitter terms due to the direction of where those two clubs were going. So it is shameful that I guess a club in Essendon's position have moved to a country area like that and have alienated so many people that they needed that club to go forward, that it's left them in a position where they can't. So that's a disappointing thing. When you hear things like that it's more alignment-based than is actually mentioned, and it's not where they're located or funds or anything like that. It's more in relation to a management level of a football club and being dominated by an alignment partner such as the AFL side in Essendon. Obviously, the Bendigo Bombers are now in a situation where they need Essendon to survive, but some people get offside when it comes to selling your soul. Yep. And as we mentioned on the program, Jim, there's so much money in country football these days and even suburban football in Melbourne that players don't want to be carting themselves off down the Calder Freeway every time to play a game of football. They can go and play with their mates and make $250 a week.
That's right.
And they can go down the bar on a Saturday night and they can have as much fun as they want in the streets of Bendigo and be a big fish in a small pond. So, yeah, I think there's some major concerns there. But with no more football at Bendigo for the rest of the season, that partnership or alignment will definitely be put under some pressure. And you'd imagine towards the end of the season, hopefully for Frankston's case, because Frankston will need to know either way. And if they're going to go with an alignment, well, that's going to relieve a lot of the financial pressures that that club's facing. If not, they're going to need to rebuild again and look towards 2010 and try and get some finances together.
With the alignments and everything, is it time that clubs like Frankston started looking at radical new ways of getting players from other teams to play for them?
Well, I think what we need to really look at here, Jim, is I think the partial alignments for these regional clubs are a way to go. North Ballarat are obviously in a different financial situation to Bendigo, but they have thrived under the partial alignment with the Kangaroos. The Kangaroos are not financially viable themselves at AFL level, so having the split partnership has worked well.
Well, what I was thinking, is it time that Frankston turned around to Collingwood and said, your excess players can come and play for us? Well, excess players, not Not the main 22.
Yeah, the top-up players.
Top-up players who don't have a team to go to, instead of going back to their local clubs, could go to Frankston.
Well, then I think you're going to end up...
It's radical, but why not look at some things that...
I understand the ideas behind that.
There's always looking outside the square type scenarios.
Yeah, but then you get a player like Rowan Frost, who... I don't know.
Still good enough to play for the VFL. If he hasn't got a spot in the 22 for Collingwood, wouldn't it be nice if he played for Frankston?
Idea in theory, great.
Mm-hmm. Probably won't happen because you've got cross the line.
Well, the only situation with that is where the clubs will look into it. Probably most Jim is the fact that if they do get six players, like for example. Come back from the Collingwood list who don't get a senior berth and play for Frankston for 2 or 3 weeks and Frankston start to build momentum. Well, those six positions are restricting six Frankston listed players from having a shot at playing senior footy.
Yeah.
And then when those six players go, they've got to try and find six players who aren't in that mix to keep that momentum going. So would you risk the development of some of these kids going forward? I think the biggest concern is for Frankston is the fact that they develop so many of these kids to 21, 22, 23 years of age, and then they're unable to maintain them. I mean, you listen to the Mornington Peninsula Football League show, and they'll mention a player like Russell Gabriel.
Well, he's a good example. He's playing Cadinia Football League.
And dominating.
Cadinia Casey Football League, and he's dominating, and... he was a very good player at Frankston last year.
Well, I mentioned
he was their number one ruckman, wasn't he?
And with centre Peter half forward, yeah, and centre half forward. And you can't expect to build a club around a 3-year process. You can't get 3 years down track, play in preliminary finals, and then those players all decide to leave. I mean,
and they say, you know, we're going to earn big bucks down local competitions.
Obviously,
when they've been nurtured in the VFL for 3 years,
they've built their value up in the VFL. Yeah. I mean. A lot of these kids getting an opportunity, like your Russell Gabriels, could have gone down to Narrowarren and played reserve grade football coming out of the under-18s and may have lost the motivation to play at that level. There are reasons for players going back to local competitions. Brad Scalzo is an interesting player that was pushing his way into the senior level football at the VFL, went back to Narrowarren and won the league best and fairest. So, you know, it's... I think it affects clubs in our areas a lot more due to the fact that our Casey Cadinia League is so strong. Box Hill seems not really rely so much on a lot of those kids. They've managed to keep a lot of those players that they get at senior level, like your McQueen, Miscambles, and Lucas Markovic. You know, if you look through Frankston's list, apart from your Sean Pollards and, Trent Shinners has been there for a few years now, but a lot of those, your midfielders have stayed strong in Winterton and Marigliani, Justin Berry, but away from those core little guys, it's very hard to maintain the big guys. And if quality big men in this competition are the difference between playing in finals and languishing at the bottom of the ladder. And look at Port Melbourne; they've got a plethora of big men they can choose from to rotate in and out of their senior lineup every week. And Frankston don't have that. And unfortunately for them, they they're operating one or two big men down at the moment, considering that chemistry they had in season 2008. So, I don't know. Port Melbourne are in a different position. They've kept that nucleus pretty strong, but they went out on a different keel, and they went and recruited experienced AFL players who had, had 10 pre-seasons under their belt and were professionals. And, you wonder where Port Melbourne will be in 2 or 3 years' time. Because
they probably had lots of money in the bank.
Well, I mean, they did pretty well in the off season. As much as we haven't seen Pat Sarnas play at senior level, they managed to counteract the loss of Spriggs with picking up Nathan Batsanis from Box Hill, and they've been pretty lucky with their own development of players. Like you'd imagine, Port Melbourne have had a Jared Dalton or a Sammy Dwyer. If these kids were going to play in the amateurs or in the Western Region Football Leagues after getting to 21 or 22, that club would be in the same situation as Frankston. Fortunately for the borough, there's a different essence around there, and players really enjoy playing for Port Melbourne. Not to say they don't enjoy playing for Frankston. I think there's a bit of a spill, obviously, at the departure of Brett Lovett last year and the introduction of Shannon Grant. There may have been a couple of kids looking to refocus their drive to play at this level, but it's left Frankston in a hole. And they could be two or three seasons away before they get themselves back on the park with a competitive outfit. I think Hibbard's been a fantastic success since season 2009.
Well, every game we've seen him.
Well, he's actually probably retired Michael Ablett, unfortunately. Michael Ablett came back and was struggling with the commitment and the rigours of, being football is built around egos. And when you walk off the field as a decorated player like Michael Ablett did, to return and not find your feet straight away, it would have been a little bit confronting. And Michael Ablett has stepped aside, like Luke Collins, another retirement in the middle of the season for the Frankston Football Club. And, I think Hibbard's been one of the best recruits in season 2009. And if you're looking for a player, I think it's for the Round Fothergill medalist at the end of the season. I think Michael Hibbard would be a chance, and there would be some clubs looking into his development at senior level, because he, finding those tough, nuggety halfback flankers who can use the ball well can be hard to find, and he's leading in the same path as Matthew Boyd and Dale Morris, who I think both started their careers at Frankston. Mm-hmm. So, big opportunity there for young Hibbard. He's been very impressive in the games I've seen, especially when your team's only one game and the ball spends predominantly of its time inside your defensive 50, to step up against bigger bodied opponents and continue to use the ball well has been a wonderful achievement so far for that young fella, and his development's been fantastic at Frankston. I think in the last two seasons, I think Hibbard was there in season 2008.